Blog Talk Radio.
Need help. In Detroit in particular, only 4% of tenants had legal help in eviction processes before our diversion program. With our diversion program, everybody gets help. Representation is really important to make the program work. And I can give you lots of statistics that will tell the story about how successful it's been. In Michigan so far, we've had 40,000 applications, and there have been 9,400 cases that have resulted in payments of $65 million already, and there are significant more in the pipeline which are going to be successful as well. You should know that the National Center for State Courts Eviction Diversion Tool at www.ncst.org/evictiondiversion is a wonderful sort of BuzzFeed-type quiz tool to help figure out what might work in your jurisdiction. You don't have to do what Michigan did. You have to do what works in your jurisdiction. And the National Center can provide some technical assistance to courts interested in setting up diversion programs. But with leadership, collaboration, and representation, you can stand up a successful diversion program that will literally save lives and be good for your communities. I know we have so many other excellent speakers. I could say a lot more, but I want to make sure everybody else has an opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice McCormick. And I want to turn now to Rashida. You've done such a terrific job in Philadelphia, and mindful of the Chief Justice's admonition that every place is different. Perhaps you could share with us what's been successful and what you've been doing in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. So in Philly, we're developing three interconnected solutions that are specifically tailored to re-envision how evictions are carried out. All of them have been named by co-panelists, but the first is right to counsel for tenants. The second is sealing or limiting access to eviction records, and the third is eviction diversion. We see each of those three components as critical in and of themselves, but together they're targeted to undermine the current eviction system and to increase access to housing opportunities. And we also are encouraged to see each of those elements highlighted in President Biden and Vice President Harris's announcements on initiatives to promote housing stability. So I'll just share very briefly about how each of those three components are working here. So, you know, Professor Desmond already described some of the elements of the eviction diversion program in Philly that make it effective, but primarily having the mandatory pre-filing nature of it, having a mandate for applications for rental assistance program allows us to both help and address individual needs as well as have significant systemic reform. We also are pairing folks with housing counselors and trained volunteer mediators to also connect them to additional resources, again, as Professor Desmond described. Second, right to counsel in eviction cases, which ensures that those tenants who have legal defenses, who have fair housing and substandard housing issues, things that need to be litigated and that are not supported by a sort of diversion model, right? Having right to counsel ensures that people are able to access justice and able to put up legal defenses and have their day in court. Last week, Philadelphia made a historic and significant investment of $3 million in our eviction prevention program, which will enable us to roll out the beginning stages of a right to counsel program. And then finally, just to highlight our last initiative, and again, the ways that we're thinking about these three things together, regulation and expungement or sealing of eviction records and screening protections, which open up access to housing by preventing evictions from having those adverse effects and that follow tenants from life for the rest of their lives because they can't get those records sealed or expunged. And so last week, Philadelphia City Council passed the Renters Access Act. It's an anti-discrimination and race equity tool, which is meant to give thousands of renters who are impacted by eviction records a better chance at securing safe and stable housing, particularly as they recover from the pandemic. And some of the things that that act provides, among other things, it regulates the tenant screening practices and roots out these kind of biases by prohibiting blanket exclusions of people with eviction records, creating look-back periods. Prohibits landlords from looking at failure to pay rent or utility bills during the COVID-19 emergency period, and also prevents them from looking at certain types of records. So again, and we see these tools as working interconnectedly. We see them specifically as race equity tools, much like the rest of the country. Philadelphia mirrors it in that the people who are most impacted by evictions are Black women, their children, and African-American families, not even accounting for income. And so this is beyond a poverty issue, right? It's a racial justice and gender justice and disability justice issue. So all of these tools work together to address those issues. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rashida, and thank you for all you're doing in Philadelphia. As we all know, there is $46 billion available in relief for at the state and the local level to cover rent owed to landlords. And so let me turn to Renee Solis and ask you, Renee, obviously in Houston and in Harris County, you all have been working hard both with outreach to landlords and tenants and working with your court system. Talk to us a bit about what you've been doing in Houston and Harris County and what results you've been seeing there.
Yes, thank you, Trish. Let me talk about some strategies that we have here in Houston and Harris County. The first strategy I would point out is how we developed a joint coordinated access for the rental assistance program. At the onset of the pandemic in April of 2020, City of Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner and County Judge Lina Hidalgo established the Housing Stability Task Force. The task force was led by State Representative Armando Wally and former Shell Oil CEO Marvin Odom. It was through this task force and through the leadership of housing advocates, community-based organizations, landlords, and the city and county where it was agreed that we should have one program for the region with a single point of access would be easier for landlords and tenants to enroll. I would also define this critical point as our first major milestone, which paved the way for the success of our program. The next strategy, or the second effective strategy of the Houston-Harris Emergency Rental Assistance Program that I would like to point out, is to what I refer to as the Texas Two-Step. In the Texas Two-Step strategy, we recognize that both the landlord and the tenant play a valuable role in the distribution of the rental assistance funds. As Matt Desmond mentioned in his presentation, it has to work for both parties and keep people in their homes. As such, we had separate outreach, communication, and enrollment plans for the landlords and the tenants. For the landlords, we engaged the Houston Apartment Association and coordinated discussions with City of Houston and Harris County and landlords so that we could establish a mutual agreement on the program terms for the landlords. We recognized that pushing too much on landlords with so much uncertainty around the pandemic would adversely impact the tenants if landlords failed to enroll in the program. In our first set of funding, or in our first wave of funding, $15 million in May of 2020, we had close to 8,000 landlord locations participating. Today, we have close to 19,000 landlord locations participating, and access is being provided to tenants. Final point I would like to highlight is a strategy to look at capacity and engage multiple partners. By the end of 2020, Baker Ripley had distributed all of the $70 million in rental assistance allocated to the program. But it was clear that rental assistance needs were still growing and additional resources would become available, which would need to be distributed quickly. Through our partner with the city and county, we brought in additional partners and created a much larger collaboration for the distribution of rental assistance. Catholic Charities of Houston Galveston joined our efforts and became a second administrator of the program and helped expand our region's capacity for processing eligibility and payments. They, by the way, did not reinvent the wheel, but instead used the same system and processes we created in 2020. We also brought in 9 CBO organizations that came in as navigators. These organizations focused on outreach, technical assistance to tenants and landlords, and help address gaps and provide other resources to tenants, while Baker Ripley and Catholic Charities focused on eligibility and payments. The results we are seeing are impressive. We distributed $70 million in 2020, and we distributed already $120 million in 2021. And we are not done yet. We are now processing applications for the additional $53 million that have been allocated to City of Houston and Harris County in this next round of funding.
Thank you, Renee, for that wonderful summary of all the work you've been doing in Houston. And I want to turn now, Gilbert, to you. Obviously, an eviction starts when a landlord files for an eviction. Your companies have taken a very different approach. And I wonder if you could talk with us sort of about what it is you've done and the why behind it.
Yes, thank you, Trish. First, I wanted to start with some statistics. So our properties have received over $9 million in rental assistance on behalf of 18,000 residents and 6,000 apartments over the last 15 months. The vast majority of those payments were received in 21. Currently, we have over 8 million in applications pending across 16 states. That number is growing every day. I wanted to thank the administration, as well as Congress, for the robust rental assistance funding that it created to match fund the restrictions that came with the eviction moratorium. It was very much needed. The question as to why, Trish, is that Wynn Companies is the largest operator of affordable housing in the United States. We own many properties, but we also manage for a wide range of owners, from large private owners to small nonprofits, even housing authorities. We manage tax credit properties, Section 8, naturally occurring affordable housing, and 10,000 market rate units. We're in small cities, rural areas, and suburbs. We're in 23 states. What's the point? The point is that Wynn Companies needed to figure out a plan that would divert evictions all across the country. It's why we're here today. And that's what our plan does. Before I hit on the points of the plan, I wanted to quickly express two fundamental principles we're guided by. The first principle is that payment and collection of rent is critical to rental housing, especially in affordable housing. The issue can't be distilled to renters versus profits, because as rent goes uncollected, variable operating costs that affect everyone's quality of life have to be cut. Preventative maintenance, landscaping, security, trash pickup, resident service provisions, frontline workers' hours at the property. These are not things that are acceptable to anyone. Rent is required. I think the real estate industry, by and large, has done a wonderful job over the pandemic, keeping people safe in their homes on the front line. But there is a second principle as well, equally important, that renters deserve a safety net if they fall on hard times through no fault of their own. The bottom line is that Wynn's plan for housing stability aims to reduce non-payment evictions by 50% across our portfolio nationwide by 2025. The plan will create upstream steps such as providing resident education on rights and lease responsibilities, connect residents with area resources such as counseling and financial coaching, pursue interventions such as recertification of incomes that date back months if necessary to the actual date of the income loss. It's going to focus on robust coordination and assistance with completing rental assistance applications, which many affordable renters find daunting. We're going to integrate achievable, affordable, and sustainable payment agreements, often as long as 9 months if necessary, so we're actually solving back rent instead of kicking the can down the road. We're going to create accountable housing stability goals rather than eviction goals for our on-site property managers, as well as the over 100 law firms that we work with nationwide. And to avoid court wherever possible, we're going to use a pre-court checklist that's required to be exhausted before we even allow evictions to be filed by our staff. It's important to note that all of these tools require tenant willingness and tenant participation to work. It has to be a partnership. In closing, we began crafting this program prior to the pandemic, and we believe it's a national blueprint and a toolkit for large and small landlords alike. This plan is not focused only on August 1st. It's built for all the August 1sts after that. This issue requires long-term and constant focus. Thanks.
Thank you, Gilbert, and your voice in this discussion is so important. I'm going to very briefly ask each of our panelists to do something very unfair, but I told you in advance I was going to do it, so maybe it's not unfair. In less than 1 minute, give us something concrete, either that you're going to do or that you recommend other locations do in the next month to help prevent evictions over the course of this summer. Chief Justice McCormick, I'll start with you.
Well, for me, it's a little bit easy. We're going to figure out what we do in Michigan, given that we still have significant CARES Act funding to contribute to this solution, and figure out how to extend it and figure out best practices from around the state. I would ask everybody else to go onto the National Center website, use that tool, and figure out what will work in your local community, and stand up and do it. You can do it.
Great suggestion. Rashida.
Yeah, so in the next few months, Philadelphia is looking forward to rolling out our Right to Counsel program, and that would be my suggestion for other localities to make sure if you have an eviction diversion program that it is working in conjunction with right to counsel and is taking into account these other principles, you know, the more long-term effects and impacts that eviction records and evictions themselves have on people's lives. And so, again, thinking about those three solutions as working interconnectedly would be my pitch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rashida. Renee, to you.
Yes, my recommendation would be to look at the data and listen to your community as to the efforts that you've made to date and identify gaps in the delivery of resources. And just check that there's no vulnerable neighborhoods or individuals and people out there that have not yet been served.
Thank you, Renee. And finally, Gilbert, to you. One thing in the next month.
Sure. I mentioned this earlier. We're going to be meeting with 100 private law firms we work with in, you know, 23 states, and we're going to be changing their incentive structures so that we can educate them on housing stability and say that an eviction diverted receives the same incentives as an eviction completed. And we think that's going to be an education and really work to help divert evictions.
Thank you, Gilbert, and thank you to all of our panelists. This was a terrific conversation, and I'm very appreciative to each of you for being part of this. It is now my distinct privilege to introduce the Associate Attorney General of the United States, Vinita Gupta.
Thank you so much, Trish, and thanks to all of you. That was an absolutely terrific discussion. So today's program to me really highlights the impact of housing and evictions on people's access to jobs, to healthcare, to schools, to safety, and more. And there is no question that this is a racial justice issue. It's a gender justice issue. It's a disability justice issue. It's a poverty and economic security issue, and it's a public health issue. I think what the panel discussion has highlighted for me most of all is that confronting this crisis is going to take intensive collaboration among the voices that we just heard from. Everyone from landlords to bar leadership, legal services providers, the courts, and rental assistance program administrators. All of us have an obligation to pitch in and help to do whatever we can to keep families in their homes. We know, and we've heard from Matthew Desmond on this, but we know that we've never had the infrastructure that we need to keep people in their homes and to prevent evictions. And the pandemic has only exacerbated this crisis tenfold. And so it's going to take all of us on this call and beyond to address this unprecedented challenge. This is why last week I sent a letter to Chief Justice McCormick and her counterparts at state Supreme Courts around the country to highlight the role that state courts can play in preventing evictions. My letter highlighted a number of steps that courts could take to help stem the tide of evictions right away. First, courts could consider issuing orders requiring landlords to apply for rental assistance in advance of filing for evictions. And for pending cases, courts could follow the lead of Chief Justice McCormick's court and put cases on a slower track to allow rental assistance to be filed, processed, and paid out. And in addition, courts should also consider amending summonses and court notices to alert litigants on the availability of rental assistance. Over the longer term, we know that eviction diversion programs are most successful when they are comprehensive. And as outlined in the joint ABA-Harvard study that was published last week, this means combining access to rental assistance with legal representation, mediation, and social services. I recognize, of course, that robust eviction programs require financial support, and I hope that it has been made clear today that the federal government stands ready to help. The Treasury Department has made clear that COVID relief funds, both the $350 billion in state and local relief, as well as the $46.5 billion in emergency rental assistance program funds, can be used to support court-supported diversion programs. And of course, we also know that eviction diversion strategies cannot be a one-size-fits-all. Jurisdictions are experiencing and will experience this crisis differently. And it's why our friends at the National Center for State Courts have put together a very useful tool that will allow you to figure out what set of diversion programs is going to work best for your community. And so we urge you to turn to that tool and to use it. As I wrote in my letter, I really believe that it is the obligation of everyone, of each and every one of us in the legal community, to do everything that we can to help. For millions of families across this country, the stakes are simply too high for any of us to sit this one out, and it will take organizing on our part of our colleagues and of other stakeholders to make sure We are leaving no stone unturned to ensure housing security in these unprecedented times. But it is why also I feel a great amount of hope to be here with all of you today. I hope that you'll be able to use the sessions following this set of presentations to discuss in very concrete ways the actions that you can take in your community to combat this crisis. I encourage you to reach out to others in your community, especially to legal aid providers, social services providers, courts and court administrators, to discuss how all of them and all of us can be part of the solution. So thank you again for your time and for your effort. And to echo again, Matthew Desmond, I do believe this is our opportunity to turn this iteration of the crisis to build long-term strategies and infrastructure for housing security and not just try to return to the pre-pandemic status quo. And we can do this together. So let me now ask Secretary Fudge to offer some concluding remarks. Secretary Fudge?
Thank you so much. Thanks for all the team participating in this. You know, our participation makes clear to everyone the urgency of the issue. And we know that all hands on. I really want to thank Peggy Bailey from the HUD team for all her work. And I want to thank all of you. Everybody tuning into this summit, whether it be our state and local officials, legal experts, and having advocates who are watching right now. Each of you has a critical role to play in helping millions of Americans remain in their homes. And I'm honored to work alongside you. I'm very honored to work alongside you. The host is, I can't get my video working here. I'll just continue. We all know COVID-19 has devastated our nation. Roughly 20 Americans are currently behind on rent. We know as well that the pandemic has exacted an especially heavy toll upon people of color and upon people of modest means. Many folks might be familiar with the old saying, when America catches a cold, Black America catches pneumonia. A similar statement can be made about marginalized communities throughout our country, about people of color from nearly every background, about folks who live in small towns, rural communities, and on tribal lands. When President Biden entered the White House, he understood the urgency of the crisis confronting our country. Actually, his vision and leadership in passing the American Rescue Plan, the government is now delivering historic amounts of relief for people who have fallen behind during this pandemic. In addition, the Department of Justice is urging our court to support local landlords in securing federal funding instead of evicting their struggling tenants. I promise you that HUD will do our part. We understand it is not easy for our state and local partners to stand up new relief initiatives in the midst of a crisis. HUD stands ready to provide the guidance and support you need to assist renters and landlords in our communities. Please reach out to us if there is anything we can do to help. Over the past 16 months, we have all been reminded of how important it is to have a safe and stable place to call home. Thanks to the leadership of President Biden, our country is making significant strides in rebuilding from COVID-19. Our economy is surging. More Americans continue to get vaccinated. Life is beginning to feel closer to normal. We cannot allow a wave of eviction to jeopardize the progress we have made as a nation. We must take urgent action to safeguard the housing security of millions of fellow Americans. That's why I'm so grateful the White House has brought all of us together for this conversation. This is why I am committed to working with each of you in the weeks and months ahead. Thank you very much, and I wish you all the very best for the rest of today's summer.
That is the end of our public session. I think it was just tremendously informative, I thought. I hope others did too. Please let us know. This will be one of many, many actions, convenings, efforts that we will be making to do everything we can to make sure our nation is prepared for the end of the moratorium. And as Matt Desmond said, to make sure that we're building something that's not just for this crisis, but a lasting infrastructure for dealing with unnecessary and very painful evictions for the future. Thank you again for everybody who participated. Thank you for everybody who is listening and joined us. Thank you.
Goodbye.
All right, everyone. You've been listening to the Queen of Show Talk, Angela Butler. That was a plethora about housing and evictions and foreclosures from Washington, D.C. The people you just finished listening to are, let me make sure I get it right, Gupta. And it's for June 30. It's the Prevention Summit to support and facilitate coordination among states. The opening remarks were by Ms. Susan Rice, Director of White House Domestic Policy Council, Wally Adeyemo, the Deputy Secretary of U.S. Department of the Treasury, Gene Sperling, American Rescue Plan Coordinator. The research overview was Matthew Desmond, Principal Investigation Eviction Lab, also the Coordinating Eviction Diversion and Emergency Rental Assistance is Patricia Lee Refo, President of the American Bar Association, was the moderator. Rashida Phillips, Managing Attorney of Housing Policy Community Legal Services of Philadelphia. The Honorable Bridget Mary McCormick, Chief Justice of Michigan Supreme Court. Renee Saul, Chief Program Officer. Baker Ripley, Gilbert Wynn, CEO of Wynn Companies. Concluded remarks with Vanta Gupta, Associate Attorney General, U.S. Department of Justice. Marcia Fudge, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And that ended the plethora. It was the White House sent an invite for White House to host the virtual eviction prevention summit. So that's what you've all been listening to. I have some technical problems, so I was not able to get it all in there. But hopefully I'll be given another opportunity, and I will be airing this on the Queen of Show Talk, Angela Butler. Thank you all.